Oh, yes, Devadana. I did think myself that the teacher came back into it again. If you had lost sight of him a bit by reason of the tongue, then he's coming back to the fore again. The importance of that, yes.
Would you explain
to us,
before you skip this intervening passage here, Brother Fred, what cursing means?
And you mean in verse number 9 and verse 10, the verb in verse 9 and the curse and the 9 and verse 10. Blessing, bless me God, curse me man, and then blessing and cursing.
Yeah.
What is the idea there?
I'm not too sure what I mean, Jim. Are you looking for a definition of the word to curse in the sense, you want us to underline that? I mean, it means, I suppose, to bring evil on a person, to implicate like the Psalms upon a person's head or upon the character.
That's what I want to get at. It's not the chap that stands at the big corner
of
blasphemy.
No, that would not be the meaning of the word. As I understand it, it means to bring down evil. There are psalms called the imprecatory psalms or imprecatory psalms. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but they're called that because of the sort of strength of the language that's in it. And that sort of word is used in connection with this word cursing, that we can do the same and bring evil upon a person's head. Is that the idea you had? Yes.
And verses,
there's
two verses in Genesis 49 that the woman
finds, I'll go to the devil. No, he means, Alan, you're speaking to that, people can't hear him. No, you're all right, no. You're still friends, it's all right.
Could I read the verses in Genesis 49 that would indicate the section, when Jacob speaks of Dan, Dan shall judge his people. We have that at the beginning of the chapter. The great judgment that the man has if he makes mistakes and he's treated as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent, by the way. We have the word serpent, which is an unusual word, it is not, in that verse there. An arrow in the path that rises the horse heels, would that indicate the cursing? The illustration of the cursing. Binds the horse heel so that his rider shall fall backwards, and then in connection with our brother mentioning the effect of the salvation on the horse, they then said, I shall wait for my salvation, O Lord.
Interesting, Alan. Yes, thank you very much.
Can we just have a comment on verse 9? Men may after the similitude of God, any man made after the similitude of God, that they bear, every human being bears some mark of being made in the likeness of similitude of God, even today. So they're to be valued.
Interesting. Can we move on, brethren? I don't want to run out of time. I'd rather run out of steam than run out of time. It's we've got to push on. Tom, nobody can see you. Well, that's all right, Tom.
Well, the consistency that is in use, for we have the parallel.
Were you talking about what verses, Tom? Verses? All right.
And
yeah.
Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. So, there's a practical lesson there, very much so. world.
Yes.
But then I think the point we must see in the passage is that it's impossible for the salt and the fresh water to come out at the same time. And it's impossible for certain fruits to get the bone of certain trees. A fig tree cannot. So that whenever you're looking at the fruit, you must see what's behind it, the seed that's behind it. So the man behind it, what he says, is really what is expressed when he speaks it.
And he expects, Brother McShane, that it will also be impossible that out of the same mouth there will come blessing and cussing. That carries that figure on to its end. You see, but it does, but it's impossible. It ought not to be, brethren, says James. Now please can we look at verse number 13 to start to come to the wisdom that is from below and the wisdom that is from above. Who is a wise man and an understanding man amongst you? Well, the wise man is a man that has wisdom. And as we were noticing yesterday, this man that is wise, he has the skill, he has the ability to judge between right and wrong and good and evil, but in the practical affairs of life. And he's asking the question, who is he then? Who is an understanding man? Who is the man who is a skilled and experienced person? He says, who is he? Is he amongst you? Well, let him out of a good manner of life show by his works meekness and wisdom. Lovely verse now, full of meat.
Wrong words mark the fruit. Good works mark the right one.
Nice.
The right one.
Good, that's nice. Yes, that's good.
It's really going back to verse 2 again. The same as a perfect man. Here's some advice as to what brings about a good, perfect man.
Yeah.
Yes. You have heard really taken up the work at the beginning and work at the end. That's only for a problem at the end. You have nine.
Yes.
So we here we have first of all reference to the wise man, and then the weakness of wisdom, and then the wisdom is intended from above, and then the wisdom is written up from above, and then the wisdom that is from above. So the man first of all has to look within his own heart, and he sees that envy and strife. He has to look down and see the wisdom of his earth.
Thank you, thank you very much, Billy. Yes, that's very helpful.
Wisdom as a mark of the teacher that comes from God.
Yes.
Now, it's not that you bear with it. You see, ask your questions about the next section, all this division, and jealousy, and envy. Is this warning to those who take up the task of teaching, that we can teach them right?
Well, I think that James, in his practical sense, Brother David, is letting you see that there are certain features which identify the source. And if you can see features that are marked the way he's marked them here, you can identify the source of these. And he wants to take your mind away from that. He says, who is a wise man? Who is an understanding man? He says, let him show, let him exhibit, let him point out from his good manner of life. Now, I would have thought, I don't know if any brothers any comment on it, if I had been looking at the word good there and thinking of the ministry of James, I would have thought that he would have used the word good that means practical things. But he didn't. He used the word good that's beautiful to behold and that sort of thing. Now, it seems to me that he's directing attention to what can be recognized in the outward appearance of a man or a woman who is wise and understanding and exhibiting the features of the wisdom from above. That's the way I see it. We should be able to recognize that. I was in company yesterday, and they were talking about various situations where the people of the world came up to believers in certain instances and in certain places and said to them, are you a believer? I recognize you as a Christian. And the person that was so recognized was very pleased that the world recognized the features in them that had some likeness to Christ. Now, I think James is pointing that out to you and to me. That's what we should be recognized by. practical that, isn't it? But it's ever so necessary. I think Tom wants to go onto the radio or something with his opening remark. You know, is everybody hearing me? Tom, we can hear you fine, Tom. Speak up.
I'm thinking what he is going to do and stand up and speak up and shut up in regard to this precious word here. And this is really what the specialistic teacher of the Lord Jesus. And when you and I are in the manifestation of Jesus, it's the manifestation of spirituality, because it's the manifestation of some of the characteristics of the perfect man.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. Meekness of wisdom it is. Now, may I just, can I make a comment before you speak, in case I'm going to run counter to what you're going to say? Deuteronomy chapter 4 links these two words together. Moses said to those that were there, if you keep the word of God, this is your wisdom and understanding. The same two words. Then he said again to the people who were around him, he said, look you out, men who are wise and understanding. So this whole thing that James is speaking about was recognized by Moses in the days of the law. And we haven't given it up in days of Christian revelation. Now, Mr. Brother,
I'm looking the opposite of the dictatorial
That's right.
Shutting out all probabilistic scriptures for other views on passages that have long since been established as biblical. I think we all need that other word, religion, and wisdom.
Yeah. Well, I think it's got a very wide scope, that expression. You know, if our wisdom was marked by such a lovely feature, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek. What a lovely word is that. We could spend a long time in meditating upon it, but we must pass on for time's sake.
Just one comment. Applying it to the teacher, the thought of the meekness has, I'm not glorying looking down on those I'm speaking to, hasn't it?
Yes.
But I'm not glorying over them. I'm not putting myself on a pedestal. I'm approaching them with meekness. And if we do teach, we must approach our fellow believers in that way, not looking down on them that we know better.
The danger with the knowledge of a man is that he glories in what he knows. And the blessing of a wise man is that he mourns over her that he knows.
That's nice. Yes. Yes. Billy didn't.
The knowledge of a man is that he glories in what he knows. And the blessing of a wise man is that he mourns over her that he knows.
And in the Christian realm we know so little, Billy, and even at the end of our course we bemoan the fact that we don't know really what we should. Yeah, thank you. Brother Sam?
This wisdom, wisdom,
bitter envy, and strife in your heart.
This wisdom descended not from above,
but the
servitude
came
to the devil. How do you
turn that
wisdom? Well, that's
what you're saying. That's worldly wisdom.
Yes.
But men were progress, but not wisdom.
Yeah.
We would know.
Yeah.
In other words, that's how men get to the top in the political.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely not, Sam. He has four features that he describes it by. He tells you that it's jealousy, it's rivalry, and one or two other things to say about the thing. That's the kind of wisdom that's coming from beneath. Now says he three things about that wisdom. He says it's earthly. I always took that to mean, dear friends, that kind of wisdom cannot see beyond the horizons of earth. That's its limit. Your wisdom can see beyond the horizons of earth. After all, it comes from above, and it's got a wider scope. But the man that's characterized in business that Sam has introduced us to, the horizons of earth. And then he says also it's essential. That is, it's soulish. It comes from the very root of bitterness within him. And he says it's devilish. And if you don't like soulish as being a root, here is a source. Now, do you think that the ungodly person is marked by these things? Such were you, such was I, before we were saved.
But the point he's making here, Brother Fred, is this. You might have an outward profession and claim to have this meekness of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the meekness, of course, is power under control. But he says, now, I want you to look into your heart. That's the but of the next verse. Now, measure up to this. But if you have bitter envying, that's the jealousy, and strife, that's party spirit, within your heart, that you're going to aim for a place or a position and to wield certain power, if that is deep within your heart, then he said, stop glory, stop boasting. Because, he said, and don't lie against the truth. I wonder there if the truth would be simply depicting the facts of the case. You're professing one thing, but if you examine the inward condition, there's this envy and jealousy and bitterness, party spirit. Is that not what he's saying? So he's identifying the source of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of a man, we're not classifying here saved or unsaved, but he's saying, look, when this is so, this is the source of what you're showing.
And therefore, if you're thinking of teaching, you should not teach. If these things are seen in you, having examined your own heart, you should hold back.
Because this wisdom is not just earthly. The opposite of that, of course, is heavenly wisdom. And the opposite of the soulish is spiritual wisdom. And the opposite of the devilish is godly.
Yes.
So that you have the features that should be seen in a believer.
That's nice, Jim. My understanding of the introduction of it is that it's linked to a little word here, let him show. And that verb there in that verse is casting its light down the next two or three verses. It's a verb that means to show, to point out, to exhibit. Now, if you're wise and you're understanding, you'll exhibit a good manner of life, and it'll be marked by works of meekness and wisdom. Now, carrying on the thought, the influence of that verb in that passage, he says, but if what we see in you is the demonstration of these things, now, we're on a different wicket, as they say. I don't like the word, but you understand what I mean. We're in a different situation when these things begin to come out. That is the way I saw it, Jim. I don't think it's really against you. I think there were
agreement. I have no quarrel with that. That's because right. It's summed up then in verse 16, for where envying and strife is,
yes,
where there's this jealousy and party spirit,
yes,
there is confusion or tumult,
yes,
and every evil work.
That's nice, yes.
So that the effect is seen.
Good thinker. That's excellent, Jim. How can we think for a moment or two, here's the brother with the horse again. Something else now, can we look at verse number 17? But the wisdom that is from above is, first of all, pure, and then it begins to set out the features of the wisdom that is from above. Would it be worth our while today for a little time to consider what he says about that?
Is pure referring to pure from all the defilements he's previously mentioned in these verses?
Yes, I think that would do, Brother Erting. You know, it means chaste and modest and pure. It has a likeness to the character of God. You know, we're beginning to get into the character of God when we consider that word.
There are 8 features not to mention.
That's nice. Some say 10, but I've looked a long time for the other 2, never found them, Brother.
And there are 10 of James' 10 commandments in the next section.
That's nice. Thank you, David. Any brother like to make a comment? Now's your chance about the features, all except Tom, that I see bouncing. You going to say something, Tom? Here you are, Tom. You can be a BBC announcer again. Good shot, just the same. Right at the head. Yes, I think we'll accept that, Tom, that it is the thing that's going to, the first one. I think it has priority, too, in more ways than priority on the list. Would you not think so, Brother McShane?
Yes, is there not in these qualities here a contrast to the things that we've been considering of the shelter? The bitter envy and strife and so on.
Yes.
Strife and peaceable, if you understand. If you get the contrast one way or the other.
Yes, yes, indeed. I think
now, verse 18 is a difficult verse.
I was hoping you were going to. You see what you get caught up on. Are we content to leave the marks now about verse number 15 before, verse number 17 before we try to unravel verse number 18, which Mr. McShane has raised with us? Have we got any more comments on the things that he says? Peaceable and gentle and easy to be entreated. You know what they tell me about that word? They tell me it's the most untranslatable word in the New Testament. Do you have any comment on that, Brother? I notice you have commented on it other places in your writing.
Well, it's certainly a unique word. It's not anywhere else in the New Testament.
Right,
and the greater problem is that I have no reference to it in the Septuagint.
Yes, well, I know. You're not going to say too much about that one.
No.
Right. Is it the opposite? It's the opposite of stubborn and unyielding. Yes. If you look at the opposite of a word, sometimes you get the impact of the word. The antonym of this word would be stubborn, unyielding. Yes, yes.
You could come back to the word
It's all right, we weren't stamping your card, Alan. You're all right. Anybody else like to say something about them? I drew attention to the word forbearing, which is a translation of the word that we have here, easy to be gentle and easy to be entreated. That word gentle, looking at us there, forbearing. That's the one I was trying to get across to you as being a bit difficult. But it certainly seems to have very fine features about it. Not the man that's going to stand up and say, I demand my rights, I'll get my rights. It's not that kind of person at all. It's the kind of person that's prepared to say, although I have rights, I'll not be wanting to claim them at the expense of other things. You know, if you like, it's the man or woman who's quite happy about being justified in spirit. I wish we knew a little bit more about that. Not so keen to be justified in the flesh.
Yeah.
but be happy to be justified in spirit. I think there might be a little of that in it. Brother Hawthorne.
Since you have mentioned the book of Proverbs, could you read these thoughts of, first of all, Proverbs chapter 8, wisdom for Solomon, chapter 9, verse 1, wisdom in activity, and then realize in the person of the Lord Jesus Christ in his life, but then marvelous is wisdom, so that if we have got at least one unique word here,
good. I couldn't improve upon that. In fact, I like it. I'll have these notes. Were these Brother Tuckington's notes? He was whispering in your ear. That's very nice. Yes, very good. That's nice.
Thank you, brother.
Were you listening to me in Sunday afternoon? Yes, I like that. He's quite correct. In the original scriptures, the first five begin with the letter E, and it ends up with the word Elios, which means mercy. Would you agree with that, Brother David? Am I right? That's very fine. Thank you.
May I draw attention, Fred, to a point here in connection with verse 13, good conversation, his works, the plural, and out of an admittedly attractive life, which is one translation of a good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The works are manifest. Now, these works are seen in verse 17. For as in between you have an evil work, but it's a different word. It's every worthless practice.
Right.
It's singular.
Yes.
So that the use of the tongue and the wisdom behind that contaminates all that it touches and makes it worthless.
Worthless, yeah.
But the works are individual and are seen, and then it will be taken up, the fruit of righteousness,
right,
in the next verse.
I like that, Jim. I should have drawn attention to that word worthless. It is worthy of being drawn attention to. I don't know if David noticed that the last two words on the list began with A. But yes, we're talking about nouns and not an adjective, but still, there it is. I'm talking about without, undivided and without hypocrisy, David, is that right? I'm thinking about the letter E being added to. But we ought not to get engaged in this conversation with other people listening. We'll talk about it at the interval, shall we? Promise. That's a date fixed. Now, we'll come to this hard verse of Brothers. What are we going to say about it, Brother?
Oh,
yeah, I thought I was getting out of it.
Isn't it saying those who make peace produce a harvest of peace? He's going back to the peaceable in the list of adjectives. Summing up those adjectives, and those whose use of the tongue produce peace, produce the harvest of righteousness, the manifestation of the divine character in those they use their tongue.
Mm-hmm.
The right thing for the fruit which this righteousness comes in by some.
Is that the end? Yes. Yes. Whose version was it? Can you remember?
I think it is one of the departments or some of those.
Yes. Yes. I hadn't seen it. All the ones that I'd looked at had just given the little word, the little preposition of. No. It might may well be. Brethren, we've got seed, and we've got soil, and we've got fruit. And it's trying to fix these things in. What is it that's sown? Is there a soil that it's sown into? If so, what is the soil marked by? And these, I think, are all the bits we've got to try and fit into this verse. Here it is again. I'll read it to you. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace. The Revised Version says, for them that make peace. The rest of the versions might say of them. Darby says, for them that make peace. Now, first of all, we've got to think about the soil, the conditions into which the seed is sown.
No?
I think you make things difficult for yourself, Brother Fred.
Well, I thought I was making them hard for you, Jim.
I think it's very simple that the wisdom is that which produces the fruit of righteousness. I judge that righteousness is the fruit, so wisdom, fruit, and the fruit sown brings peace. And it's peace to those that commence the whole cycle. So that there's peace as a result, wisdom, righteousness, peace.
Yes. In the first chapter, those who hear were exhorted to receive it with meekness. Receive with meekness the implanted word. That was Jim Hamlin. Now then, we're thinking of teachers that are teaching in meekness. And the teacher, or my way to say that the teacher who sows peace produce a harvest of righteousness. On the first occasion, then, the sowing is present, for the harvest will be in the days to come, not of stumping at the judgment seat of Christ, but eventually. What the teacher has sown in peace, and in righteousness, will produce peace. There will be peace in the assembly. Teachers can produce that. And I know that there needs to be the proper conditions to teach it. I think that we're thinking of conditions to receive it. And the effect of will be eventually will be changed in the assembly.
Thank you, David. Well, my own simple way of understanding it now that I've made it hard, I've got to try and make it easy. I thought it really meant that the good life must yield something of value. And living the good life, seeds are sown. But as you sow the seeds, they will only fructify, that will only yield fruit if the soil is right. And so, if we find that the conditions are right, and we sow the right things, we live the right life, then peace will be one of the fruits and the other things that will come. But it all stems, I think, from living the good life. Brother, are you going to say something? Can you shout it out then, if you can't get a microphone to you?
Thank you, David. By my own simple way of understanding it, now that I've made it hard, I've got to try and make it easy. I thought it really meant that the good life must yield something of value. And living the good life, seeds are sown. But as you sow the seeds, they will only fructify, that will only yield fruit, if the soil is right. And so, if we find that the conditions are right, and we sow the right things, we live the right life, then peace will be one of the fruits and the other things that will come. But it all stems, I think, from living the good life. Are you going to say something? Can you shout it out then, if you can't get a microphone to you? Right. I haven't thought of it that way, Brother. I thought that these things, well, the evidence of where these sensual, earthly, devilish things came from, features that were marking, that we were able to identify things by. But it's a thought worth thinking about. For time's sake, I'll need to go into chapter 4, Brother.
I want to get right into it, because it's exactly in contrast with what you're just considering now. For everybody to hear that. That is, the peace and the righteousness is in contrast to the wars and the strife of chapter 4. And I thought that the man who shows peace and righteousness, he's going to reap a harvest of that. It'll bear the fruit of peace and righteousness.
Right. And are you saying then, Brother McShane, that the person who's not living the good life and sowing the right kind of seeds, and he's going to come out and be seen in chapter 4, verse 1?
Yes, because the wars and fightings are not the outcome of righteousness and peace.
No. He says what they are the outcome of, though, doesn't he?
Yes.
They are not. Still your members. Yes. Your pleasures. Yes. Well, the wars and the battles that we have here, this desire after gratification of the desires that's in your heart, I think they are the development of the evils that we've been considering up here in verses 14 to 16. That's the way I look at it anyway. Will you tell us then the difference between the wars and the fighting? Because I think that he understood what we understand in our day about fighting. I don't think the principle has changed, Brother Jim, that you have local battles and extended situations in warfare. And I think what he's saying is here that whether they be extended situations, wide ones, wide conflicts, then, or whether it be local ones, they come into the same end.
So the first word means, doesn't it, a protracted state of hostility. You're at war with somebody, and then nothing they can do is right.
Right.
And out of that arises battles that are fought from time to time simply because you're in a state of war with another.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they're two different words, but that is quite correct. Well, the one is a battle arising from it. Well, that localizes it a bit, brother. Thank you. I'll make that condemnation.
The big one, the small one, and well, it is identified for us where they come from. They stand from you, Brussels, while you love us. All the desire to have pleasure. Oh.